According to ancient wisdom, there is a time and a season for everything, a right time for everything. A time to plant and a time to harvest, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from hugging, a time to hate and a time to love, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time for war and a time for peace. There is a rhythm, a flow, a balance in life that is healthy and natural and unavoidable, unless we are talking about today's generation of young leaders who have known only constant war-making and war-mongering and vitriolic partisanship, but that's a sermon for another day. Where the natural ebb and flow of life are recognized and valued, the key is knowing what time it is, which time is which, or to put it differently, knowing when to act and when not to act, when to do something and when not to do it. Earlier this week, I went out of town for a few days of continuing education. It turned out to be one of the most timely and stimulating conferences I have ever attended, but it had a most inauspicious beginning. Across from me and one row up on the airplane sat a friend of mine from Syracuse. Next to her in the aisle seat was a 10-year-old girl traveling on her own. At first glance, the girl seemed quite confident and matter-of-fact about being all alone. But her constant fidgeting and nervous energy told another story. A small backpack sat in her lap, full of favorite snacks, books, and an electronic reader that doubled as a game machine. Sitting where I was, I could watch her jumping from game to game, spending a few minutes on one electronic game, then another, constantly switching from one game to the next non-stop without ever completing a single one. My friend did her best to connect with and calm the young girl, engaging her in conversation, asking her questions about the games she was playing, listening carefully to her explanations and demonstrations. The whole time, the girl never took her eyes off the video screen. Somehow, she even managed to keep playing as the airline attendant poured a glass of ice water for her and handed it to her to drink. A few moments later, the girl made an awkward and abrupt motion, sitting straight up, opening her lips, jutting her jaw forward, and clasping her hands to her chest right below her throat. The motion was so swift and jarring that it caught the immediate attention of all of us who sat nearby. My friend turned and asked the girl if she were okay. Was something wrong? Was she having trouble breathing? Had she swallowed a piece of ice, perhaps? When the girl made no sound, but continued to look like a fish gasping in air with frightened and bulging eyes, the woman directly in front of me sprang into motion. She jumped out of her seat, commanded the girl to stand up, pulled her out into the aisle, spun her around, wrapped her own arms around the girl's abdomen, and with a quick upward squeeze, dislodged the piece of ice that had caught in her throat, blocking her airway, risking her life. There is a time for action, as well as a time for patience. Knowing which one is right at any given moment makes all the difference. As great a difference as it made on that airplane Monday afternoon. Jesus tells a story of an orchard owner whose patience has run out with a non-producing fruit tree. "Cut it down," he orders. "It's wasting space. I've been watching it for 3 years now, waiting for any sign of fruitfulness. Get rid of it. Cut it down." But the gardener has other ideas, pleading for one more year and promising to do everything he can to get the tree to ripen and bear fruit. "Let me dig around it, loosen the soil a bit, mix in some fertilizer, then we'll see. If it produces fruit next year, all well and good. You've got a good tree. And if not, then you can cut it down and get rid of it." The rule of thumb in those days was that fig trees took 3 to 4 years to mature. But like our world today, the thought of one additional year was out of the question. The only thing that mattered was results, immediate results. Anything less than that was a wasted investment, a waste of time and effort and money. In telling and hearing this story, take careful note, please, of what Jesus says and does not say. For any of us who tend to be soft-hearted and lenient souls, Jesus does not say anything goes. It doesn't matter what you do. Clearly, God desires fruitfulness. Clearly, God looks for us to live whole, productive, abundant lives. Clearly, God has expectations of us. But for any of us who may be legalistic and tough-minded souls, Jesus doesn't say the rules are rigid and unbendable. God's desire is for every human being to be whole and complete, to be filled with joy and life. God's desire recognizes that the timetable for that is not a fixed one, not definite, that some of us mature more quickly and easily, and some of us take longer to get there. So that there needs to be room for flexibility and adaptability, room even for some trial and error, room to make mistakes, then learn and grow from those mistakes, room for second and third and 77th chances. At the very least, it means that we who are bleeding hearts and we who are hard hearts need each other in order to grasp and understand and proclaim the fullness of this gospel. As Jesus' disciples, as ambassadors of Christ, it ill behooves us and the world to ignore God's grand vision for human life and well-being. But similarly, as Jesus' disciples, as Christ's ambassadors, it ill behooves us and the world to ignore God's penchant for forgiveness and redemption and reconciliation. I was reminded of all that at my conference this week, a conference that focused on circles as a means for helping individuals and families to escape poverty and isolation. Over and over again, I was reminded of the central principles of circles: friendship, relationship, mutuality, support, accountability, and how closely those principles align with our understanding of what it means to be the church, the body of Christ, committed to building each other up in love. The symmetry. between what we profess to do and what Circles aims to do is so very clear that it has caused me to begin rethinking how we foster cross-race, cross-class, cross-cultural relationships, and how we shape our ministry, especially our outreach ministry, not just on helping people get by from week to week and month to month, but on actively and intentionally helping them to get ahead and make their way out of poverty permanently. The world may say some people just can't be helped. But I hear Jesus say, don't ever give up. Try again. Do whatever you can, whatever it takes, to help persons blossom and flourish. And I heard that same message Thursday afternoon as I spent several hours locked up inside a Christian-based, court-ordered drug and alcohol treatment center. To the world, to their friends and families, to their former employers, to their numerous victims, these 24 men may have been hopeless losers, lifelong addicts and drunks, who had thrown away chance after chance after chance to turn their lives around until they had reached the point of no return. But as I sat in the jailhouse with those men and listened to their stories and watched how they interacted with each other and saw the signs of transformation in their lives, I heard Jesus say, don't ever give up. Try again. Do whatever it takes to help lives blossom and flourish and be redeemed. Do you want to know the way to heaven? Wherever you see these words and actions to match, wherever you see Jesus the gardener patiently calling for one more chance and doing everything it takes to make that happen, surely heaven is not far off. Surely heaven is not far off.